the gut punch of hearing those three dreadful words, you have cancer. It's like the floor just dropped out from underneath you and you're in a free fall. Fear, anger, grief, a tidal wave of emotions crashing over you. But it doesn't have to be this way. Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Deming. As an integrative oncologist and former radiation oncologist who has cared for thousands of patients over her career, let me guide you safely through the fog. Join my Six Pillars of Healing Cancer workshop series. Starting May 2nd, I'll unleash the proven holistic roadmap to clarity and deep inner calm. I'll impart the fundamental nutritional, emotional, physical, and spiritual keys to unlocking your own body's healing potential. No more grasping for answers just out of reach. No more of the unknown weighing you down. Registration is open now. Check the link in this episode's description to anchor yourself to this life-changing series. You've got this. What if your enlarging prostate or breast cancer were not attacks or mistakes, but coded survival programs intelligently activated by your biology? I'm joined today by Dr. Melissa Sell, who shares the five biological laws of German New Medicine and how every symptom, intractable pain, and even cancer itself serves an ancient purpose written into your DNA. You'll learn the specific emotional triggers and traumas that set these adaptation programs into motion and how your body uses illness as a unique language to aid your healing. And stick around to the very end. Dr. Sell reveals examples that will have you seeing your body's symptoms in an entirely new light. So let's dive in. You're listening to the Born to Heal podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Katie Deming. After two decades of practicing as an oncologist and caring for thousands of patients, I've seen firsthand how our healthcare system places obstacles in your path to true healing. My guest and I will bridge the worlds of Western medicine and alternative healing to help you achieve optimal health. Expect to uncover new insights, share a few laughs, and maybe even shed some tears along the way. But most of all, we'll learn how to heal from within together. So let's dive into today's episode. Welcome, everyone. I am very excited to invite Dr. Melissa Sell today to talk to us about German New Medicine. Welcome, Melissa.
Hi, Dr. Katie. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you and your audience today.
You know, I want to just start by having you explain what is German New Medicine, and so we can just have a good understanding of what it is that we're talking about today.
So this is a discovery that was made by a German medical doctor after the tragedy in his family of losing his 17-year-old son to a gunshot wound. He tried to survive for 3 months, had a leg amputation. It was an extremely dramatic ordeal, but his son ended up dying. And a few months after that, this doctor, Dr. Reich Gerd Hammer, he developed testicular cancer. And he was a traditionally trained medical doctor. He had several patents. He just had an intuitive sense that this testicular cancer had something to do with the loss of his son. You know, he was a very healthy man. There was no cancer in his family. And 2 years later, he was working as the head of an oncology unit in Bavaria. And so he had the opportunity to test this theory, this idea that was bubbling up for him that, you know, the loss of my son was in some way responsible for the development of the testicular cancer. And so he started to interview patients and, you know, asked every testicular cancer patient, did something happen before this diagnosis? Did something shocking, tragic? Did you lose someone prior to this? And he started noticing that every single man who had testicular cancer had some type of loss. And then, you know, he talked to a woman with glandular breast cancer, and she also had a specific shocking event, but it was of a different flavor. It was a worry. It was a concern for someone she loved. And everyone who had lung cancer experienced some type of death fright shock. And so everyone who had liver cancer had some type of starvation conflict. And so this pattern started to emerge that these cancers that people had developed were initiated by some type of shocking trauma, but a very specific flavor. And so each different organ seemed to have some rhyme or reason for why a person would develop this particular cancer. And then, you know, he's like, okay, so these people have changes. They have cancers in their organs and they had some type of emotional shocking experience. There must be something going on in the brain because the brain is the conveyance from the outside to the inside. So he started to analyze CT scans and he found that there were ring formations, these circles, these target ring shapes in particular regions of the brain that always correlated to which organ had the tissue changes. So wherever the cancer was, there was always an impact in a specific area of the brain, and it always correlated to a specific type of experience that the person had. The one who was shot, Dirk Hommer, is saying, Geard, you're onto something. You're figuring this out. And Dr. Hommer said that he went weak in the knees, that he's like, is this how it works? Is there a specific thing that happens that shocks the organism, shocks the individual? And then there's an impact in the brain that activates what seems to be an adaptive program of biology that has an intentional purpose. You know, whereas before we thought that cancer is a randomness, it is, you know, the destruction of normal DNA, the replication of cells that are just out of control, random, no reason, we don't know why, or it's some type of poison or something just gone awry in the body. He's seeing that there's actually a particular program, like the body is programmed to adapt in this particular way. So, and even when you start to think about it, it makes so much sense. So for him, testicular cancer, if an organism, if an animal, if a human, if you lose your offspring is now dead, what can the biology do? What's the solution? The solution in nature is have another child, you know? And so the ability to enhance the testicles to make you better able to procreate, to replace what was lost, actually makes a lot of biological sense. And if you're very worried about the well-being of your child, to produce extra breast gland tissue, to produce more breast milk, makes a lot of sense. If you had a death fright shock and you, you know, what do you need in that moment? I need more oxygen in my blood as soon as possible so I can get out of this dangerous situation, to proliferate the lung alveoli, to create more surface area to absorb oxygen in the lung, makes a lot of sense. And so he started to see that every tissue, it behaves in a particular way. And so this whole map started to develop. And over time, he developed or discovered rather 5 biological laws of nature that are consistent in every case. So in animals, in humans, he wouldn't put it in this map. If you are able to watch the video and see this map behind me, this is a map of all of the tissues of the body organized by embryological germ layer. That was one of the things for myself that really just blew my mind and got me so just amazed by this system, because I'm a chiropractor. That's my background. And one of our very first classes you take in chiropractic school, and I'm sure in medical school too, is embryology. You know, we take histology and embryology. So you're learning all of the different tissue types, squamous epithelial tissue, cylindrical tissue. You know, you're looking at all of the different layers. You're looking at the embryo and how, you know, and the blastocysts and the implantation and the neurula and all of these little amazing things that happen. And Dr. Hommer found that every tissue is organized in a certain way. And the endodermal tissues operate in a certain way and are controlled from the oldest part of the brain. This is the oldest tissue. And then each layer builds upon itself. And you can even look at this from the evolutionary sense that this is the ancient tissue. This is the oldest. This is what came first. And then each adaptive layer has built upon it. And now we have this amazingly complex and intricate human body that has an organ that has all of the germ layers that can be found. And so when we're decoding things through this lens, you're always looking at, okay, what's the symptom and what's the tissue? Because the tissue tells you the story of the conflict that was experienced by the individual.
What's so interesting when I started looking at this was just that connection and starting to have it. I knew, you know, from my experience and what I started studying was that trauma was related to cancer. And this is, you know, from looking at studies like the ACE study, where we know with childhood trauma, those children have an increased risk of developing cancer or other conditions. But also, when I first heard about German New Medicine, and this was actually when I was still practicing, probably around like 2021, I started to ask my patients, and oftentimes there would be these stories. And unless you know to be looking for it, you don't even know to ask. And so I think that this, the five biological laws and this idea of it being broken down by the different tissue type is really interesting. And then looking at the different shocks that happen. I'm wondering, with the five biological laws, can you do kind of a high level of what those are so that people understand that?
Certainly. So the first biological law is the psyche-brain organ connection, also called the iron rule of cancer. Because once again, he found that this was consistent in every single case. And so this is the cause. This is the thing that initiates this significant biological special program. And so one of the things to realize in the system is we no longer look at what's happening in the body as a disease, because a disease implies wrongness. It implies error. It implies a mistake is going on. There's some problem. But when you're looking at this as a significant biological special program, we're seeing that the body has inborn innate programming of adaptation that gets turned on by a specific shock. And so when the shock happens, depending on the content, so whether it was the loss of a loved one or a separation from your mother or a self-devaluation conflict. So it depends on what exactly happened. How did you perceive? How did your psyche? So your psyche isn't just your conscious mind. So this isn't like, oh, well, I didn't, you know, think any bad thoughts or negative thoughts. It's not about negative thoughts or bad thoughts. It's about biological adaptation. So your psyche, it's your whole ability to detect everything that's going on in your environment. And so we know there are studies that show that the brain can realize something that's going on like 6 or 7 seconds before the conscious mind even knows that something like something shocking has happened. And so think of this as like lightning speed. Your biology is adapting to something that has happened in your environment. And so the psyche brain organ all at once. So this is a simultaneous thing. It's not like it happens in a sequence, 1, 2, 3. It happens all at once. As soon as the psyche perceives this shock, the biology activates the biological program. And so there's an impact in the brain in a specific region. And then there are changes on the tissue level. So psyche is the experience that happened. Brain is the impact in the brain. And then the organ is the tissue that begins to change based upon what is necessary to survive this shocking conflict. And so that's the first biological law. Now, the second biological law is the law of two phases. And so one of the things that Hummer, you know, was piecing together is like, he says, you know, in conventional medicine, conventional training, they look at around 500 hot diseases and 500 cold diseases. But what he found is they are actually two phases of one program. And so we have our normal day-night rhythm. So this is our normotonia. This is when you are, you know, you're not in a conflict. During the day, your body is going to be more sympathicotonic. So your sympathetic fight or flight nervous system is more active during the daytime. This is when you are, you know, out hunting and gathering and doing life. And during the evening, you shift into more parasympathetic. So that's the rest and digest, the feed and breed. And that's our normal day-night rhythm. But when we have a shock, when this conflict occurs, when you find out that your identity has been stolen and all of the money in your bank account is gone, I mean, you get that call or you get that email or that text and what happens? It's like a lightning struck. And so depending on how you perceived it, so how a person perceives a particular conflict, it's not like an identity theft always causes a self-devaluation conflict or always causes a death fright conflict or an indigestible morsel. It depends on the person, which is one of the other things that really just turned me on to the system is it's so individualized and unique to the subjective experience of one individual. And so while there are general themes for each type of conflict, which program gets turned on in you depends on your personal history, your belief system, your family, kind of all the programming that you've received your entire life. But something like a baby or, you know, an animal, they tend to have more very, you know, it's not about their belief system. It's just about their biology. It's just a primal reaction. And so when that thing happens, we shift out of our normal day-night rhythm and we shift into the conflict active phase of the special biological program. And so when you are in a conflict active phase, and that's one of the cool things about learning this map, Because when you know, ooh, that thing just happened and my hands are cold, my feet are cold, I'm not hungry, and my mind is racing. So this is when you are actively in the stage of adaptation. My tissues are doing something. And we'll talk in the third biological law about exactly what the tissues do. But basically, during the conflict active phase, the tissues do something different. They adapt depending on what's necessary for the situation. And that persists until you find a resolution. Oh, it was all a mistake. All the charges are going to be reversed. It's not a big deal. Oh, what a relief. And when you feel that sense of relief, you know, the warmth comes back. So that was the cold phase. And now we go into the warm phase. The warmth comes back to your body. And so if you were in conflict for, let's say, 24 hours because you were uncertain, you didn't know what was going to happen, you know, you were constantly thinking about it, you weren't eating, you weren't sleeping, you were in this conflict searching for a resolution until you got the call that said, oh, listen, everything's going to be fine, the money's secured, everything's good. Oh, you relieve the stress, you resolve the conflict, and now whatever happened during the conflict active phase. So what happens is the tissues can proliferate, so we can grow extra tissues. So that was the example, like with the lung. So if it was a death fright conflict and my lung built up additional tissue, now that tissue needs to be broken down. It's to put disposable tissue. The body knows. And they even say, okay, cancer cells look different than regular cells. That's because they're kind of emergency program cells that were built up during this emergency period. And then during the healing phase, they get decomposed. They get broken down. And so we build up tissue during the conflict phase, and then we have to break it down during the healing phase. Another possibility is that we lose tissue during the conflict active phase. So an example of that would be the bronchial mucosa. So the bronchial mucosa actually will widen during the conflict. So whereas the lung alveoli, that belongs to this yellow group, the old brain tissue. And so that grows during the conflict active phase so it can better absorb. The red group, we lose tissue. So we widen ducts or we widen passageways like the bulls. And so if we have a territorial fear conflict, so I'm scared of my territory. And so if that's the program that gets activated rather than the death fright conflict, the bronchial mucosa has the message to erode, to widen. So we can make the bronchial tubes wider. So once again, we can bring in more air. We can also activate multiple programs at the same time. So we're not only widening the bronchial tube so more air can come in, we can also be proliferating additional lung alveoli tissue so we can better absorb the air that gets in. And then once we get into the healing phase, once we're safe again, once the threat is gone, oh, what a relief, the tissue starts to change. It starts to go back to its normal state. And so if it was widened, we have to rebuild it. And so I start getting kind of tickles in my lungs and I start coughing. If there was tissue buildup, it needs to be broken down. And so then we have coughing or coughing up mucus and maybe even blood because the body, it's a construction site. And so we might have a few broken blood vessels as the body is decomposing the tissue that's no longer needed. And so during the healing phase, you'll get to a point of maximum swelling because all healing happens in a fluid environment. So anytime you're swollen, anytime you're puffy, anytime your head is swollen, you know, if you have a headache, that's swelling in the brain because we have to heal on all three levels. We heal on the psyche level. That's the resolution of the conflict. We have to heal on the brain level. And so that's like a headache. Oh, pressure in my brain. There's going to be fluid to help heal that area. And then on the organ level, there's also swelling. And so that is going to go on to a certain point, the point of maximum swelling. And then we have something called the epicrisis. And so this is a sympathetic stress push that allows the program to squeeze the fluid out of the area that's in healing. So we have to squeeze the fluid out of the tissue, squeeze the fluid out of the brain. And so that will be the height of this healing phase. And then after that, we have a continued scarification phase. And then the program's over. And so the program has each of these discrete phases. And the cool thing about that is that a person who knows this map, who understands their conflict, how long it lasted, when they resolved it, and they start feeling, and that's the fascinating thing is once you typically, when you start feeling sick, ooh, I'm headachy, I'm sore, this is when the person thinks that the problem is happening. We think, I'm sick now. But really, when you understand the map, you see, actually, I just resolved something. I just chilled out about something. I just got good news. I'm in a resolution phase. I'm in a tissue repair phase. And so your language will start to change when you understand the second biological law. You'll say, oh, wow, I'm healing. My tissue is restoring. And so that is the second biological law, the law of two phases.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you on that one because that was a lot. That was so much information and actually such a great explanation. But when you talked about this phase, you say it's two phases, but then you mentioned something about three, but it's really the conflict active phase and then the healing or resolution phase. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. And yeah, but the healing phase has different segments.
Okay. And okay, so let's go through that. The healing phase, what are the different segments again of that?
Yes. Yeah, so there's what's called A. So that's the first phase of healing. Then there's the epicrisis, and then there's PCLB. And PCL, CL means colysis. So the lysis of the conflict. When the conflict ends, that is the resolution. And then we enter into PCLA. So that's the first phase of healing. That's the first swelling phase. And once we get to the point of maximum swelling, there is a sympathetic squeeze. And so often this will be the person will like either dream, they'll dream about the conflict again. And that will be like the big squeeze that pushes out the fluid.
And so is that the epic or that's the epi? Okay. The epicrisis. Okay. That's the squeezing.
That's the squeezing. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then after that is B, which is the scarification phase where the tissue repair continues because we need to be set back to normal. So the tissue is just continuing to repair.
Okay, perfect. So let's just take an example because I think it's helpful for people to wrap their head. You've just said a lot of information, even with my experience in caring for thousands of patients. I was like, oh my goodness, this is a lot of information. So I want to break it down for people. But what you just described there was that, you know, a lot of people think when they have symptoms that that's when there's a problem. But actually what you're describing is that that's actually when we're starting to have healing of the problem, because when we were in the conflict active phase, basically we were in shock and not able to, our body wasn't able to mount healing at that time. And so when you develop symptoms, it's actually potentially a good sign because we're starting to have healing at that point. Is that correct? Hey, conscious healers. Dr. Katie Deming here. I've created an intimate space where we dive deeper into complex healing topics, where you can get personalized product recommendations and more resources to fuel your conscious healing journey. I'm excited to announce that I've launched the Born to Heal Substack newsletter. You'll receive exclusive information that goes beyond the 1 hour a week we have here together. Behind-the-scenes interviews, delicious healing recipes, and on occasion, episodes get a bit too, you know, sciencey. So I'll create a handy FAQ for those episodes. Subscribe for free today at katiedemingmd.substack.com or find the link in the episode description and get ready for a weekly infusion of holistic health wisdom.
Well, there's just a little distinction that I would say when you said the body isn't able to mount healing. The thing is the body is doing a very specific adaptive protocol by eroding cells or proliferating cells. So something very specific is happening during the conflict active phase. And so it's not even, there are groups that don't even use the word healing because healing implies that, again, something bad happened and now something good is happening.
Oh,
but the whole thing is good. There is adaptation or there's repair. You know, so we're adapting to the circumstances necessary by building up the tissue. So an example would be, let's use the prostate. So what does the prostate do? The prostate adds, you know, prostatic fluid to the ejaculate. And so when a man is feeling threatened in his masculinity, if he feels degraded as a man, if his, you know, wife cheated on him with a younger man and he's feeling, you know, less of a man, the prostate can have the signal to proliferate. So I need to add more musky masculine juices to the ejaculate so that I can be more of a man. And so when I'm in the conflict, you know, this is an old brain program and we're building additional tissue cells in the prostate. So this is prostate enlargement. So the prostate grows so that it can add more prostatic fluid to the ejaculate. And is that bad? Well, in nature, it's not, because if you are a man and you have and can have a survival advantage, a reproduction advantage over another guy. If your, you know, body is more odorous, if you have a more musky masculine scent, you know, the female might walk on over your way instead of over his way. And so we can see that every biological adaptation, it has a meaningful purpose in nature. And so in our modern mind, it may not make sense, but you always have to look at this from the ancient evolutionary biological animal kingdom perspective. And it actually makes a ton of sense if that gives you just a little bit of an advantage. Same thing. So another example would be the urethra of a territory marking conflict. So if you're feeling threatened in your territory, how does an animal mark its territory? It pees on things. And if I widen my urethra or widen my renal pelvis so that more urine can make it out, so I have more stuff to mark my territory off, that could be the advantage. That could mean I win the territory because you guys can smell more of me than of that one over there. You know what I mean? And so it's like, it makes so much sense when you take it to that deep biological level. And then so nothing bad is happening when the urethra widens or when the prostate grows in size. Something meaningful is taking place. And then during the repair phase, the reconstruction phase, the body is just, if something grew, it now needs to decompose it. If something eroded, we need to rebuild it. And so when you have a UTI, you know, my urinary tract is inflamed. Well, that means that the widening is now being put back to normal. And so, yes, there's going to be swelling. And obviously, if there's swelling in a small area, like the tube of the urethra, it's going to be painful when urine goes through it. You're going to have some burning. You're going to have some discomfort. But that doesn't mean that something bad is happening. That actually means that your tissue is in a restoration phase. Or for a man, you know, if his prostate, if he's having, you know, cloudy discharge in his urine, it's like, oh, what's going on here? You know, or if he's having night sweats. So night sweats actually indicate that tubercular bacteria are actively decomposing a tumor that grew during the conflict. And so this gives us a new frame for understanding certain symptoms and things like night sweats. And that's actually an indication of tissue breakdown, tissue decomposition. That means that you resolve the conflict, which is actually great news.
Got it. So I just want to take cancer for an example in this, because one of the things that I'm thinking about here is what you're describing is the resolution phase actually requires the, you know, resolution on the psyche, in the brain, and also in the tissues. And let's just take cancer screening, where we find a tumor. And am I connecting this correctly, that in that case, that person may not have gotten into the resolution phase? Their body was just in the conflict active phase, doing what it was intended to do, running this program to protect them. But then we've caught it. And unless we actually help people understand that this is a biological problem, we can treat it, we can do these things to it, but it actually won't help the organ resolve because we're not addressing this psyche, brain, and organ kind of program that needs to run. Is that correct?
Precisely. And there are different tumors that develop during different phases. So for the old brain, this yellow group, the tumor grows during the conflict active phase. For the red group, so the example would be like the breast duct, that tumor actually doesn't grow until the conflict's already been resolved. So there are nuances in understanding which types of tumors grow during which phases. But in general, what you said is correct, that you can find a tumor. And if you just treat the organ level, but you don't treat the psyche and you don't help the person to recognize and resolve the conflict, you know, you can even have it removed. And you know, we see cancer reoccurrences. It's because you only operated at the organ level. You didn't get to the psyche. You didn't help the person to make that connection to what was going on in their experience, which is why so many treatment methods really miss the mark, because they're not helping the person to understand, why did this even happen? You know, even when you Google, why does this or that cancer happen? There are very few answers. There's, you know, maybe family, maybe environmental factors, but even something that we think is just a guarantee. If you smoke, you're going to get lung cancer. There's tons of people who smoke that don't get lung cancer, and tons of people who never smoked a day in their life who die of lung cancer. And it's like, obviously, it's not just the environmental factors. It can't be. because otherwise we would have a better system for understanding how to help people. And we do not as it stands. But this system, Dr. Homer's discovery, literally changes everything. It is the biggest revolution in medicine and health and understanding the body that has ever been.
And one of the things that you said in there, you know, I've seen clinically, you can have, and I'm just going to take a man as an example, but I'm sure there are women, but it's like, he smokes his whole life. He's drinked, he's done everything that we tell them they're not supposed to do for their health, but he doesn't worry about any of it. He just has a lens through which he sees the world that he's like, I'm going to be fine. And you know what? They live forever and don't have any disease. And of course, this is anecdotal, but I can tell you that I've seen that. And so one thing that is really fascinating about this system is this idea that it's through the perception and the lens through which we see the world, and that for each person, a different, like the same event could cause different adaptive responses in them, and maybe nothing, right? That they may not have an adaptive response if it doesn't shock them. They're like, whatever, and kind of roll with it. So one thing that you said in there, then you were talking about the different types of tissues, and let's just go to the breast. So what you're saying is like a ductal carcinoma would be someone would have swelling or growth of a tumor in the resolution phase. But is it true that then lobular cancer, which arises from the lobules where the milk is made, would actually grow in the conflict phase but start to resolve in the resolution phase? Is that correct?
Exactly. Yes, that's the distinction. And the breast is a great example because we have both tissue types present. We have the lobular or glandular. So that's the one that grows during the conflict active phase. It's controlled from the cerebellum. It is old mesodermal tissue, where origin tissue type. So it's a growth during the conflict phase. And then during the healing phase, there is tubercular decomposition of the extra tissue. And the duct, though, so the duct widens. So, and this is the difference between a worry, so a nest worry conflict. So I'm gravely concerned for the well-being of my child. So, you know, and imagine an animal mother whose offspring is bleeding out on the plane. It's like, what can my body do for my offspring right now? Well, it's going to need fluid hydration. It's losing blood. And so just think the animal body can produce this ability to, you know, kind of rapid fire, let's make some milk for this baby so it doesn't die for this young offspring. And so we still have that ancient biological programming, even if you're 6 years old and you're not nursing any children, but if you're worried for one of your offspring or even your pet, like you can, you know, this can register for the love of a pet who is unwell that you feel this, you know, this nourishing, nurturing connection with. The biology can turn on that adaptation program to grow the lobules, the glands of the breast. But then the duct has to do with a separation. And so this is when you feel like someone has been torn from your breast. And so obviously the ancient biological correlation would be the baby. And so, you know, if there was a loss of a baby, if, you know, again, an animal snatched your baby when you lived out in the, you know, on the prairie and a wolf came and took your baby, it's like, this baby that was here, that was by my breast, is now been ripped away from my breast. And the ancient biological programming says if the baby's not there, we need to widen the breast duct to siphon off the milk because it's no longer needed. And so when we have some type of correlate experience of a loss, a separation, I know a woman who's, you know, she was just with her father 2 days prior, and then he died suddenly in a car accident. And she felt like he was ripped away from her. And so she, you know, went through this period of just absolute shock, absolute grief. And so the biology is getting the message, widen the breast duct, widen the breast duct. And when she realized, and she luckily was aware of this map prior to the whole experience, you know, she was like, I need to process this, because she was just absolutely, you know, devastated for months. And then she, you know, did some healing work. She did some releasing work. She did some rebirthing and resolved the conflict. And just a couple weeks after she kind of had this release of all of the emotions from this loss, she feels a lump in her breast. But she knew, this is the tissue restoration phase. So the body, you know, that duct is now going through a tissue repair phase. And so that is, you know, the distinction between a tissue restoration that causes a lump versus the growth during the active phase.
Okay. So I want to let you go on with the three other laws, but I know the one question that people are thinking right now is, well, then what did she do? Do you know what I'm saying? If she, in the healing phase, recognized, but now she has a tumor then like within this system, what happens then at that point? What is the healing? What is someone who understood this framework, you know, with her diagnosis, then what happened then? Like, what does that person go through?
It all depends on the individual. And so the thing is when you understand this map just tells you why what's happening is what is happening. And so someone who really understands their body, understands their conflict, knows their conflict is resolved, you know, and, you know, really has studied and understands what the phases they'll go through, they do things a little bit differently, you know. But I always, you know, it depends on the belief system of the person, because a lot of times people aren't finding this map until they've already had a diagnosis, they've already, you know, had some kind of treatment, are in the middle of treatment, are at the precipice of, am I going to do it, am I not? And so this isn't, you know, do treatment, don't do treatment. This is what makes sense to you. And so you have to study this and know this for yourself. And you have to kind of meet yourself wherever you are as far as what you believe you need. Because there are some people who like really get it. They really understand it. But their deep down beliefs, because of early indoctrination, the things we've been raised with forever, you know, they might do something different. So this lady, she's unique. You know, she didn't even get a formal diagnosis, because the diagnosis in and of itself can be shocking for someone to have a biopsy, to have a mammogram, to have a scan, and to have, you know, what you view as an authority figure, a medical doctor, tell you something scary going on with your body. So she's different simply because she's been in a different world for a very long time, and she understood things in a different way. And so she didn't do anything traditional, and her breast is fine today. And so she, you know, she's one of the ones that knew it so much, and she had such a personal connection to her body and to her emotional experience that she was able to navigate it completely outside of the system. You know, but that's not to say that everyone is capable of doing that. Everyone should do that. That's simply one person's experience. But when you understand the biological adaptations and you understand that this actually isn't a scary event, that's part of the biggest problem. The biggest fuel to the fire of these adaptations is fear. Because when you're fearful and panicked, as soon as you know, because a woman can, before she even has a diagnosis, because of her prior programming, if she just feels something in her breast, immediately she can have a death fright conflict, a self-devaluation conflict. You know, it can open up all these additional biological programs simply because of her perception of what this means. I mean, myself, I had a grandmother and an aunt that both had breast cancer. One just had surgery and just had one breast removed. The other one had extreme treatment. And I recently found out, I didn't know this, but because I think I was only 3 years old when she passed away, but her official cause of death was radiation poisoning, you know, so she had treatment and the other one didn't have treatment. And so it's like, gosh, there's so many variables. There's so many things that go into what happens with one individual's case. And so there's never a blanket prescription, do treatment, don't do treatment. It's all about the person. And so this particular person, she navigated it outside of the conventional system.
Got it. Okay. So, and this is, I think, one of the things. So Melissa and I talked about this before coming on this recording. And I just, for full transparency, I want to share with my listeners kind of, you know, when I first heard about this system and then the idea of cancer just like not being treated was like, what? I was like, I understand the idea of this and actually it makes so much sense to me. But then I really was like, okay, maybe German New Medicine is good for other things, but maybe not cancer, because I wasn't ready to hear that idea of maybe not doing treatment and really thinking about this from like, this was your body doing what it was supposed to do. But I love what you just said, is that I want the listeners to hear this, that this is all personal decision and what you choose to do with it. But regardless of what treatment you do or you don't do, this information is valuable for all of us to understand, because it can help give awareness around the conflict that has occurred and in looking at, you know, where you're at in that process. And so I think regardless, I don't want people to shut off to this system because the idea of not doing treatment for cancer seems crazy, because there's value here. And there are other places actually where people use German New Medicine, like for pain, understanding when you have pain in a certain area of your body, it can be really helpful for people of intractable pain. I'm sure this is probably part of what brought you to this work as a chiropractor. I know another chiropractor who took a similar route and practices now German New Medicine as, you know, his practice. But Okay, so let's go on to the third biological law.
Yeah, so we've mentioned this a little bit already. This is the tissue distinctions. And so this is the compass for understanding why which tissues do what they do. And we start with the oldest part of the brain, the pons of the brainstem, controls the endodermal, these old brain, basic reproductive and digestive functions. And so just think about the most basic organism. You know, it's not concerned about its self-esteem. All it's concerned about is getting a morsel of food, processing that morsel, respiration and reproduction. It's just doing very basic things. And so that is what the old brain tissues, it's all the tissues of the alimentary canal, anything that has to do with processing a morsel of sound, a morsel of air, a morsel of food, the glandular tissues to produce extra juices or absorb extra juice. And so these tissues, when we have a conflict, there's going to be an impact in the brainstem in a particular area, and there's going to be proliferation of extra tissue. So it grows during the conflict active phase. And then when you resolve the conflict, it's decomposed. And so it's broken down afterwards. And that is how the biological program runs for the old brain tissues. Then we have the cerebellum. So again, just think about we're building. So we start with the ancient and then we're going to the next layer. We've got the cerebellum. And this is the old mesoderm. And so now, and Dr. Hummer, you know, describes like, if you look at, again, like an evolutionary process, you have just a fluid dwelling creature that is just eating and reproducing. And then, you know, if you develop and you are now on the land, you need a protective layer. And so that's when this old brain mesoderm cerebellum controlled tissue came in. This is our protective layers. And so this is the dermis skin. So the deeper part of our skin, this is the pleura, the pericarditis, all of the protective thick linings of the skin, of the underneath skin. What they respond to is a conflict of feeling attacked or feeling soiled, dirty, defiled in some way. And so this tissue, similar to the yellow group, similar to the endodermal tissue, it proliferates. It gets thicker. It gets bigger during the conflict to better protect you during the time when you're in the conflict active phase. And so growth during the conflict, then we have resolution and tissue decomposition. This is a good time to enter with the fourth biological law, which is the ontogenetic function of microbes. And so microbes in the body operate as microsurgeons. They are helpers. And so it's like, okay, we said that these tissues grow during the conflict phase and then they decompose. Well, how do they decompose? Well, how does, you know, wood in the forest, how does it decompose? How does, you know, anything in nature, how does it decompose? Well, with bacteria and with fungus. And so bacteria and fungus are our helpers. So just like the bacteria and fungus will work on a dead tree in the woods to turn it back into soil, the bacteria and fungus that lives inside of our body will break down this extra tissue when it's no longer needed. And so it only becomes active during the healing phase. And this is where, you know, we also will need to change our perception of what we call an infection, because an infection is this idea that bad bacteria are doing something bad to me. And so I need to turn the bad bacteria off so they stop doing this bad thing to me. But when you see there was an intentional program, there was a growth of tissue, and I resolve that conflict, and now there's decomposition. And so anytime you have bad breath, funky, you know, gas or BMs or any kind of smell in your body that is unusual, there's bacteria at play. There's bacteria that are decomposing tissue that was built up during the conflict active phase. And so that kind of gives you the first two. We've got the, because there's three embryological germ layers, endoderm, mesoderm, and ectoderm. But functionally, there are four. There's the endoderm, old mesoderm, new mesoderm, and then the ectoderm. And so we did the old, again, operates similarly to the endoderm, tissue growth followed by tissue decomposition. Then we get to the new mesoderm. And so the new mesoderm is controlled from the cerebral medulla. And this is now the structure of the body. And this is the connective tissues. So all of the connective tissues of the body, the bones, the muscles, the ligaments, the adipose tissue, the cartilage, all respond to this one. This one's really unique because it's also called the luxury group. So what happens with this tissue is during the conflict active phase, there's necrosis. There's loss of connective tissue when you are in a conflict. And the conflict theme for the new mesoderm is devaluation. So self-devaluation, loss of self-esteem, feeling broken, not feeling strong enough, not feeling good enough, not feeling capable, not able. When you're feeling not capable, not able, broken in some way, the tissue breaks down. There's necrosis of the bone, of the joint, of the muscle, and that tissue breakdown will keep happening until you resolve the conflict. But when you resolve the conflict, that tissue is then rebuilt and restored to stronger than it was before. And so, you know, when you break a bone, that bone becomes the strongest bone in your body. It's a similar principle. When you have been devaluing yourself, you know, so let's say there's a boy in middle school and he's going to run a race and he thinks he's, you know, the fastest and he's beaten by a girl. Oh, all of a sudden, a physical performance, self-devaluation, you know, she beat me, she was faster than me. And so he loses his self-esteem. And so he can have breakdown of the tissue in his knee, for example, if that's where the psyche kind of localized, my knee kind of hurt a little bit today, or I wasn't fast enough because of, you know, my knee or my foot. And so you can have this physical performance self-devaluation where the tissue starts to break down. And then when you boost your self-esteem again, when you win the next race or you win the next, you go play, you know, kickball and you win and you're feeling better about yourself. Then you go home and you're like, Mom, my knee really hurts. There's swelling in my leg. What's going on here? Well, you resolved a self-devaluation conflict. When you resolve it during the healing phase, there's swelling of that tissue. Because remember, all healing, all restoration happens in this fluid-filled environment, which means pressure on the periosteum, swelling. Ooh, this hurts. But that means the tissue is restoring. And so that's how the new mesodermal tissues function. Tissue loss, followed by tissue growth. And the whole biological purpose is served in the enhancement of the tissue. So while the other conflicts, the conflict active phase is when the purpose is served by producing extra juices, by thickening the tissue. This one isn't served. The purpose isn't served until following the resolution when the tissue is stronger. And so that's the new mesoderm. And now we have the ectoderm. So this is the most advanced, the most highly evolved, the cerebral cortex. And this has to do with social interactions. We have hierarchy in our tribe of who the sexual connection and also territory conflicts are involved in this ectodermal region. And so the ectoderm is the outer skin. And so the obviously the ectodermal skin, all the skin that covers your body, but also the, you know, the lining of the mouth, the lining of the external portion of the vagina, the ducts. So the bile duct, the hepatic duct, all the ducts are lined with squamous epithelium. And so this tissue has erosion during the conflict active phase, and the purpose is the erosion. So another example I gave was the urethra. And so the urethra is going to widen during the conflict. So we're losing tissue. There's necrosis. There's loss of tissue. And the biological purpose is to widen the opening. So we want to widen the breast duct. We want to widen the bronchial mucosa, widen the urethra, because those are all squamous epithelium. And when we have a certain type of territory marking conflict or separation conflict, territory anger, what happens is we widen the tissue during the conflict until it's resolved. When we resolve it, the tissue is rebuilt. And so something that can happen, though, when we're rebuilding a duct is we can have backup of fluid that's supposed to go through that duct. And so there can be, you know, if there's ever calcifications in the breast, that's usually an indication that you run the ductal program and there's been backup of breast milk that has caused calcifications. And so that's something that can happen depending on how much swelling has gone on. And that depends on how intense the conflict was. Also, there's a very special biological program that's good for everyone to know. And this one accelerates any program that's active. If you're feeling isolated, abandoned, like a refugee, feeling kicked out, feeling alienated, or if you're scared for your life, if you're like, oh, I'm going to die, you can have a conflict of the kidney collecting tubules, which goes back to its old brain, endodermal tissue. And the kidney collecting tubules, when that conflict is active, you hold on to water. Your kidney collecting tubules close. And it's like, I'm a fish out of water. Because that's, again, we have to go back to the old ancient programming, fish out of water. Anytime you are swelling, so the swelling, remember I said, happens during the healing phase. You can also have swelling during the conflict active phase with the kidney collecting tubule conflict. And so if you do have an area of your body that's in healing, let's say the knee conflict, the physical self-devaluation, you're in healing with that, but you're also feeling a little isolated because, oh, my knee hurts. That means I can't go play kickball with my friends. Now I'm feeling really isolated. My kidney collecting tubules shut off. I hold on to water and the knee puffs up really, really big. So this is one of the very important conflict programs Hommer discovered. And so this is one of the first ones you want to start to work on when a person is dealing with any type of healing phase. We want to see, are you retaining water? Are you feeling isolated, abandoned, not included? You know, and this is something that we dealt with a lot over the time of the pandemic. People were literally isolated, locked up, quarantined away from their families, which is actually the very worst thing we could have done, because that's what accelerates swelling, panic, and what's happening. The adaptation process seems like it's getting much worse when you retain water, but really it's not worsening the condition. It's simply we're adding a lot of fluid to the system, creating more pressure, more difficulty breathing. And you can see just the cascade of things that can happen when you're holding on to water.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Just looking at that, adding on conflict onto that just basically worsens the picture there. Okay, so I think now you've done 1 through 4, because we did the ontogenetic. How do you, for the fourth one, it's called ontogenetic?
The ontogenetic system of
system,
microbe.
Yeah, of microbe. And then, so what's the fifth?
So the fifth one, and this has already been mentioned because this is just the weaving in of all of the biological programs. This is the quintessence. And the quintessence of Germanic healing knowledge is nothing in nature is meaningless, malignant, or diseased. That it's meaningful, and that nature only does what makes sense. It does what is biological in order to have the species survive and reproduce. So every single program, and when you start looking at your health issues through the lens of how did my ancient body need this program in order to survive and reproduce? And when you start seeing it in that way and you stop feeling, you know, cursed or broken or like you're being punished or something's wrong with you, and you say, none of those things are true. What's actually true is my intelligent body has innate programming that helps me to better survive and reproduce. And when I have conflicts that threaten my survival or my reproduction, my body steps in and changes my tissues. And so what's happening right now are intentional tissue changes that happen in response to shocking, devastating, heartbreaking things that happened in my subjective human experience.
Got it. And so in this system, as a practitioner, this is what you practice, German New Medicine. The whole approach is to help people understand what program has been activated and where they're at in that, and basically helping them come to resolution. Is it from the psychological standpoint is like the main work that you're doing? Is that correct? Or that's the piece that I think for me is would be helpful to understand, like, how are you helping people through this process?
Yeah, the main thing I do is encourage them and help them in their education and understanding of the system. Because me telling you that, oh, when you have, you know, a swollen urethra, this is your body doing the healing phase. But you're like, oh, but it hurts. But if you don't understand the tissues, and so I teach a class called The Language of Adaptation, because I want every person who comes my way, I want you to learn how the body adapts. I want you to understand it from your own perspective, in your own body. So if your child has a symptom, if you have a symptom that, you know, you're like, okay, I'm learning. Okay, that's what this tissue is. This is how this tissue behaves, because there's nothing that can replace that understanding. Because the only way to get rid of the fear is to understand why your body is doing what it's doing. And now on the psyche level and resolving conflicts, you know, my main approach in helping people is helping them to become aware of their perspective, aware of how they think about whatever the topic of the subject of the conflict is. You know, we always are looking for a biological resolution, because a natural biological resolution is always going to be the most effective. You know, so if you lose a dog and you're devastated about the loss of the dog and you're having a self-devaluation because you didn't catch the thing in time, or they ran out in front of the car and you dropped the leash and it was, if you're feeling so, the natural resolution to the loss of a dog is another dog. And to, you know, and to forgive yourself and to let go and to, you know, look at the circle of life and to perceive the situation in a way that makes it so that you're not constantly beating yourself up. And so we have to get into the nitty gritty of how do you think about this? What's the story you're telling yourself about what happened? Can we replace what was lost? Can we make a practical change in the external environment? Get you, you know, that's the thing in nature. Well, yeah. When the offspring dies, you know, the next cycle, we have another baby. We do it again, and we don't get, you know, an animal doesn't get fixated on a previous loss. Humans, though, you know, we have the capacity, we have this thing called memory. And so we have the capacity to get fixated and to really go into these conflicts in ways that are not serving us. And so really the biggest premise in this is to think, learning to think biologically. What in nature, in biology, what's the solution to this? Not in psychology. And there is a very big distinction between psychology and the practical application of these five biological laws from the psyche brain organ perspective, because psychology, you know, kind of we get up into lots of conceptual things, but we really need very biological and practical resolutions. And so the more practical, the more biological you can start thinking about life from an ancient perspective, because the modern world, modern society is all screwed up. And so our modern filters really distort and prevent us from finding resolution in many cases. And so we learn the map. We understand the map for ourselves in our own bodies, and then we learn to think biologically, and we develop our conscious awareness and our ability to pay attention to our narrative, the story we're telling, what we're believing about ourselves, our body, our past, our future, in light of what's happening. And so that's kind of my, you know, the steps to the approach that I take in assisting people on their own personal journey of learning this work.
That's very helpful. And so, you know, I think we're, you know, I have learned, honestly, this episode is so dense with so much information. And I feel like you do such a job of explaining this system. And I love that you have this class, Language of Adaptation. If people want to find you, you know, take this class and learn about these biological laws, how can they find you?
Yeah, you can go to dr.com. My YouTube channel is a great place to start too. There's a lot of basic GNM video, so you can just kind of jump in and start learning. And then that class, yeah, we meet every Monday at 11 o'clock Pacific. It's a 90-minute class. When you join, there's also a library of the past year plus of classes that we've done. And so, and just understand that this is a huge, complete paradigm shift. It's a completely new way of seeing everything about health. I mean, I thought when I came into this, I had already been in the holistic kind of natural health world for a decade. I thought I knew everything about health, and this changed literally everything for me. I had to stop everything I was doing and study for 9 months to wrap my brain around this system. And I was like, wow, everything that I taught people, you know, I changed my tune about everything. So something I was very into nutritional approaches for cancer prevention and for health promotion. And I would tell people, you know, sugar is really bad for you. It's bad for your immune system. It's bad for your body. It fuels cancer. It does all of this stuff, you know, and in this system, it's like, there are people, you know, like you mentioned with the guy, the old country guy who just eats whatever. He's eating preservatives, he's eating sugar, and he doesn't have cancer. So how come the sugar didn't cause cancer for him? Yet, you know, I knew tons of people who were health fanatics, who did all the healthy things and have been doing all the healthy things for decades and have a cancer diagnosis. And that really just blew my mind. How could this be? If what I was teaching people about health, if this was the way to prevent cancer, then these people should be definitely not having cancer. But when I understood this map, it was like, oh, because you could have the perfect, most pristine diet, avoid all the toxins, do all of the perfect, healthy things, yoga, meditation, do it all. But when you have a shock, your ancient biology is programmed to adapt your tissues. And if that shock doesn't resolve, one of the biggest things with this is timing, is that the longer a conflict is active, the more tissue that is adapted, the more serious the potential consequences. And so, you know, when a person's been in conflict for a year and there's been tissue growing, tissue breakdown for years and years and years and years, you know, that's when we get into kind of a complex situation where, you know, even in this system, there are situations where, let's say, a colon tumor has been growing, you know, growing and growing and growing for years and years and years. You know, even Dr. Hammer would say, excise the tumor, you know, go in and have a surgery to remove the tumor simply because it is now blocking a passageway. You know, but Hammer, whereas conventional medicine would say, oh, well, let's take all of this because we're afraid of the cancer moving around. He would say, you know, you just take the area where the tumor is, because that's where, you know, that's the locus of where the adaptation is and the conflict. It's not in the rest of the tumor, the colon. You don't need to take out, you know, extra feet of colon for a preventative. You just need to take out the area that's in the blockage. And so this system is not a shun all medicine, never use, you know, medication. It's very specific about the reasoning. You know, so this isn't one of those systems that just shuns everything in the medical system. Hammer even said, so there's examples of like the thyroid, for example. If you run a thyroid program for years and years and years and you build up and break down tissue over, you know, decades, your thyroid will actually get to the point where there's not enough thyroid hormone in your body because you've run the program too many times. And so something like taking, you know, a thyroid hormone replacement would be actually necessary for you. And so that's where, again, this isn't a throw out the baby with the bathwater. There's no good in, you know, conventional medicine. It's no, we use it for very specific reasons and in understanding the context. And that's what current modern medicine misses is the context. Why did this happen? What is the reason? You know, taking targeted steps through the medical lens can be very helpful, but if you don't understand the reason, you're just in the dark. You're just cutting organs out and not getting to the actual cause, not helping that person to deepen their relationship with themselves and find peace in the areas of their life that they've been in conflict. And so it's holistic. It takes into consideration everything about the person.
Yes. I think also you brought up in there two things actually. So one is that you can do all the right things, like all the eating and stuff, but if you have, you know, healing or illness is not just about the physical things we do, you know, that we do to our bodies. It's also about this kind of emotional, mental, you know, stressors and having shock. And one of the things when you said that about the shock, I think can help some people. One of the things that I find people get a little bit defensive about is when you start to talk about emotions or trauma being related to illness and specifically cancer, sometimes people think, gosh, well, like I have cancer. And now on top of that, you're saying it's my fault. But what you just described there is like, no, this isn't your fault. It's that something shocked your system. And there was a biological process that was, you know, it's adaptive, but it's basically a process that has run from that. So we're not saying it's your fault. Living in our world, and like you said, today's society is backwards. We've got everything flipped. And so living in the society that we do, we're exposed to a lot of events that can be shocking and traumatic for us. And it depends on also how we were raised and you know, the lens that we see the world through. So I really appreciate that you mentioned that. And I also just want to mention to the listeners, I'm not saying that diet is not important. We just had Dr. Seyfried on the podcast really describing how cancer is a metabolic condition, you know, that the metabolism is affected within the cancer cells. And so there is benefit to, you know, doing the physical things. This is just, we're adding on to the system. Most of us in Western society think about cancer as a physical condition. And we're saying there's physical components because in the way that we are taught to live in modern society, we are not doing the physical things that we need to be doing to keep ourselves healthy. But then there's also these other components of the mental and emotional psyche components to creation of illness in the body. And I love what you explained here, I think helps give people a framework to just start to add on and start to open. And this is what I'm wanting with the podcast is to open people's minds. Like you don't have to think this is the answer, but I'm wanting people to hear it and to say, you know what? This is helpful to add on to all of the other information that I have so that they can start to explore these other aspects of illness because our body's potential to heal itself, it's designed to do that. I mean, that's the name of the podcast. We were born to heal. Our bodies are designed to heal the things that happen to us. So anyway, it has been an absolute pleasure. I'm so happy to have met you and to have had you here on the podcast. Thank you so much, Dr. Melissa Sell.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I love that you mentioned the, you know, it's not about fault. It's not about, oh, I'm to blame. It's about, wow, my body is helping me. My body is always doing the right thing. And something shocking happened to me. And, you know, it went unresolved for many years. And so the ability to just recognize, to see these things, to make these connections. And sometimes it's hard to kind of go right for cancer. So just watch a sneeze. That's what I always say. Watch the next time you sneeze, because a sneeze is a resolution of a stink conflict. And so pay attention when somebody sneezes around you, what annoyed them? What was frustrating to you just moments before this sneeze happened? And that's the cool thing about this map is you don't have to take anybody's word for it. You don't have to believe it. You just have to observe your experience and watch when you have a symptom. Watch when a pimple pops up. Ooh, how did I feel attacked? Or what did I feel dirtied in some way? Watch for a toothache. Ooh, who did I want to bite, but I had to hold back? You'll start to see the map. It will reveal itself to you when you get curious and pay attention. So yeah, have fun with it.
I love that. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining me on Born to Heal. It's been a privilege to share this time with you. And I hope that today's episode has offered you valuable insights on your journey toward optimal health. Please consider subscribing, sharing this podcast with your friends, and leaving us a review. To learn more about how you can work with me, please visit katiedeming.com. You can find additional resources in the episode show notes linked below, and remember to join us next week as we continue to explore more holistic approaches to healing. Until then, this is Dr. Katie Deming reminding you that just like me, you were born to heal.